Good afternoon. My name is Wick Dufford. I'm the county attorney examiner. And we're here today to have a motion hearing with regard to certain matters that have been raised preliminary to a hearing on remand of an application by Dyke District Number 12, which was sent back to the hearing examiner by the county commissioners to look at three particular questions. We've had several pre-hearing conferences, and this motion hearing probably in an excess of optimism was designed to simplify matters before we went to the hearing itself. Just before we begin, let me make a few comments. So far in our record, there are 39 exhibits that have been admitted. Two since the hearing concluded. One is a partial transcript of the first day of the hearing, and the other is a letter from the county commissioner saying, use the latest core hydrology in evaluating our remand. I'd just like to make a note that we have these motions and voluminous materials attached to them. None of the things attached to these motions are really exhibits in this proceeding. They're useful as background for understanding what's being argued in the motions, but they are not in themselves a part of the record. likewise, the record before the county commissioners is not a part of our record. This was a field event, and apparently they received some documents in addition to what had been issued by the hearing examiner. I don't know what those were. I've never seen them, and they are not part of our record. So we're limited to what's gone on before the hearing. And in that regard, the transcript of the second day of hearing is not a part of the record, at least it's not at this time. It has never been admitted. And we don't have that to rely on as a test exhibit. I wanted to make a brief comment on the first day of hearing, and that is that, as you know, something went wrong with the recording equipment, and most of the hearing that day wasn't recorded, although there was a good deal of testimony. I have looked at my notes and the records that we have, and it appears that there are really just two witnesses that didn't appear at the second of the sessions we had. And the purpose of the second session was to provide an opportunity for those who maybe didn't get recorded the first time around to get on a recorded record. The two that did not reappear were a gentleman named Kenneth Johnson, who's a dairyman who recited his experience with the 1990 flood, and expressed the opinion that they needed some help there in the nuclear chance. The other was a fellow named Bill McCord, who had mostly questions to ask. He questioned whether the notice had been adequate. He had some questions about the motives of the applicants here, their relationships to the Corps and to the business community in Burlington, and some additional questions about the whole accreditation certification process. So that's basically all the record that those guys made. I certainly listened to them, and I took notes of what they had to say. Beyond that, we have testimony on on the record for everybody that's cleared these proceedings. So, with that, let's proceed. I have it in mind that once we're through here, we should spend a little time figuring about what our next step must be. But I don't think that should take us very long. And I, as you know, put out a memo going through all of the motions that I'd received and setting kind of a schedule for how they would be presented. So that's dated April 2nd in my book. And if you have that, we will follow that that course. I'm hoping that everybody can keep their argument to about 10 minutes or very little more than that, and that then we can get through all this in a relatively reasonable period of time. So, without further ado, let's find out who's here. Who's representing the Dyke District?
Your Honor, I am John Schultz.
Okay, and for the City of Burlington?
Scott Thomas, City of Burlington.
Okay, and for the City of Cedar Willet?
Craig Schuster for the City of Cedar Willet.
And for the intervener?
Larry Kunstler.
And for the county?
Joseph Morgan.
Okay. Well, according to my list, the first thing we want to hear is the Dyke District's and the City of Burlington's motions to strike allegations regarding a district commissioner, and this is in the initial motion made by the intervener Kunstler. There was some suggestion regarding the position of one of the Dyke District Commissioners. So I'll give it to you gentlemen to argue that.
Mr. Examiner, before we begin, may I ask for a bit of clarification? I spoke to my colleague, Mr. Schultz, earlier today with regard to the order of the motions to be heard, and we looked at number 5 and number 6. Those are respectively the city's motion in limine to limit testimony and exhibits to those relevant to the matters remanded. Number 6 is the Dyke District and the city's motions to restrict hydrology data. It occurred to us that these were one and the same.
Okay. Yes. If that's what you think, that's what they are.
I haven't spoken to Mr. Schustrom or Mr. Kunstler, but if it's all the same to you, we would
sure,
let's suppose combining.
Just combine those. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes.
Your Honor, I have spoken to Mr. Thomas, my colleague, about this and some other things too. We do agree that those are two issues that could be combined. In terms of breaking up the time, here's what we would like to propose if this would be acceptable to yourself. On the first issue, since it's regarding one of my commissioners, I would need a... are we allotted 10 minutes apiece?
Well, yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to need that on this.
I think you're right. Here's what I would propose. The first argument, I would take the lead on that, and I should take 6 to 10 minutes, and then Mr. Thomas would add some additional information. The second one, that's the Dyke District's motion. That would take me about 10 to 15 minutes. I don't think any longer, but it's hard to limit that to 10 minutes, especially if I have to, you know, do some overhead.
Okay.
I assume the overhead would be available.
I think so. I think Mr. Kunstler has already touched with it out.
Okay, good. And then the next issue would be Mr. Kunstler's motion to disqualify, and then the 4 would be Mr. Kunstler's motion to disqualify experts. Now, would we be permitted response to that, brief response to his motion?
Of course.
As I said in my memo, arguments for each motion shall be made by the moving party, or followed by a response by parties desiring to respond.
Okay. I just want to make sure that's still applicable. And then, as we said, 5 and 6 may be combined.
I would, Mr. Thomas would plan on talking for a period of time, then I would talk for a period of time.
Okay.
Hopefully not more than 10 minutes.
I would think not.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're ready to start, and Mr. Schultz, I guess you're the laboring
order. I'm the laboring order, okay. Mr. Hearing Examiner, well, for the record, my name is John Schultz. I'm an attorney from Burlington, Washington, 160 Cascade Place, Burlington, Washington. I'm the attorney for that District 12. Your Honor, when I argued number one and number two, he's raised some issues that I've never seen before. I think because of Mr. Consular's ownership of the website, because of the what I see is merging between what documents you have filed and documents on his website and his filings which hyperlink to his website. I think we've got some real issues here that I think have muddied the record. I do have some proposals where we can clean up this record and move forward. But having said that, that's the problem I see. In addition to the what I refer to as the plethora of documents that are critical, attacking, disparaging, and some other things, which I don't frankly think that should be part of these proceedings, which have now been filed and posted on the website. So, with that background, we have made the first motion to strike the proper allegations regarding the right to support the commissioner. And I will tell you that is directed to Commissioner Adrian to identify who he is. Information can post it on the website, of course, which discerns his identity. But I want to step back for a minute here. Mr. Hearing Examiner, I don't have to tell you, you know, what your powers are as far as, you know, the conduct of the proceedings. You won't be able to cover anybody in this room. But I will point out that you have the power to regulate the course of hearings and the conduct of the participants. Which is the second part of that that I'm looking at when I'm talking about. And that's Rule for Hearing Examiner, Section 1.01. You also have the power under 1.11. Excuse me, I'll put this up on. You also have the powers, Your Honor, under 1.11 to exclude or add evidence, and we'll be getting to that when we talk about the submission of outdated material from 1995. And Your Honor, I would also submit that another thing that governs these proceedings is CR11. The court rules govern these proceedings, and CR11 generally is a drafted sanction that it deals with certain conduct in hearings, and the CR11 simply says that any attorney, and it includes pro se litigants, so anyone who's not an attorney, must comport themselves in hearings and evidence as if they were an attorney. And the rules under CR11 provide that any party signing documents certifies that the pleading they sign, to the best of their knowledge, is number one, well grounded in fact. Number two, warranted by existing law. And number three, not intended for any improper purpose, such as harassing, causing unnecessary delay, or factual content that is not warranted. So now I get to our motion. In the intervener's conclusion at page 17 on one of his motions, and he's cited this in the record, there is a portion in the conclusion that says, did the Honorable Hearing Examiner even make a determination of what portions of Burlington would be taken out of the floodplain? And in both cases, does it involve property that one of the Dyke District Commissioners who works for one of the major developers in the valley owns or has an interest in? Now, when this came out, I had a blistering phone call from my commissioner, and he said, I've had 20 people contact me and call me by telephone and say, what is this? Are you helping this developer? are you doing, this for purposes of the financial gain? It caused him a great deal of embarrassment. He said to me, quote, he said, what's wrong with this person to make these allegations, which have nothing to do with any of these proceedings, nothing. And there's the implication that the district commissioner owns property in the district, and that there's no flood control, but they're doing this so he can develop his property, and for the implications for financial gain. But intervener failed to note that for a commissioner to serve as a commissioner, he must own property. So that is part of, one part of his accusation was fallacious. And when I say accusation, that's what I mean, because that's the way my commissioner took it. It caused him embarrassment. It's caused his erosion of some of his authority in the community. This is a public official who has to run for office again. He's got some people angry now at him because they believe this stuff. And again, he was inserted in the police that had nothing to do with this accident. And it was signed by a person who has the same responsibility as an attorney to be honest, truthful, and practical. And these are clearly beyond the pale as far as accusations. Under CR 12F, which is what we requested, you have the power to strike redundant, immaterial, impertinent, or scandalous material. We view this as scandalous, and both Mr. Thomas and I have cited case law on this. The definition of scandalous is any allegation that unnecessarily reflects on the moral character of an individual or state anything in repulsive language. Mm-hmm. Further, there's a case, McGill versus Appalachia Intermediate, 646 F-Stop, 239, if you cite it. And that case says striking allegations are permitted, quote, that reflect adversely on the moral character of an individual who is not a party to the suit and unnecessary to the decision on the matter in question. Now, Mr. Durkin is not a party in this lawsuit. The District 12 is. So there's no reason to point out to the commissioner and defame him in salacious language. I mean, I walked into the courtroom and people were here and I couldn't make a record. People in this room heard what Mr. Pencil said to me as I walked in the court. So, Grant, I would request that this reference in the conclusion, page 17, lines 4 through 12, be excised and be stricken. Has no business being in the pleading. In particular, since Mr. Kunzler gets these pleadings, posts them on his internet, on his website, and communicates otherwise defamatory material to third parties. Now, I have never seen anything like this in litigation. So that's where we make the point to excise this derogatory material. So, Your Honor, I would request, and this is in my motion, Your Honor, it would be better to refer to my motion and to Mr. Counselor's statement. Okay, that'd be page 17, lines 4 through 12.
That's in Mr. Counselor's.
Yes. That's what we would seek to have stricken from the record. I would also ask you to admonish Mr. Hunsler when further disparagement or defaming parties or further action and statements that are outside what we're trying to decide here. It muddies up the record. This information is communicated to third parties. For example, his response has been circulated to the county prosecutor, to the county, to the city. The newspapers asked for copies of it. And if someone's on trial and there's a transcript or a supposed transcript that's been altered, then you can envision there being testimony of a policeman that says, well, yeah, I saw this person and I don't think they committed this crime. Then you have a footnote at the bottom that's circulated to everybody And the footnote says, yeah, right, I know this guy's guilty of sin. And that's communicated to third parties on a website. It's filed in proceedings, ostensibly showing that there's a transcript or a reference in the document. And, Your Honor, in my next segment, I will go into the transcript portion of this because I think it's more serious. But, Your Honor, I would request that you strike that material on this line. I would request that you note for the record that these statements have been made. They're not a part of the proceedings. But admonish intervener to essentially conduct himself like a gentleman. Comport with the rules of CR 11. That's the all the evidence proceedings.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well within your time.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm
going to Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner, and I'll be brief. Your Honor, I point out that the purpose of this remand proceeding is to consider three issues. The first issue is the actual effect of the levy modification. The second issue is the analysis of the pathway and the volume of flood water. The third issue is compliance with the NIMS, National Marine Fisheries Service, FIA. Those are all the issues that were outlined in the Skagit County's order of remand. And these issues are all arise in the context of the Shoreline Management Act, as well as the Skagit County Shoreline Master Program. Mr. Kunzler, however, raises additional issues, and he takes a far different approach, one that I don't believe is supported by the law. You, the hearing examiner, to consider several ancillary issues, such as the decision made in 1985 or thereabouts to designate Gage and Slough under the Shoreline Management Act, and whether the applicants are motivated by flood control or flood insurance or something else entirely in applying for this shoreline substantial development permit, and whether the employer of one of the Dyke District Commissioners will have property that benefits from the flood protection that will be afforded under this Shoreline Sustainable Development Permit. This latter issue does nothing more than impugn the motives of the applicant. There's no evidence in the record or elsewhere to support such an allegation. Intervener has not pointed to anything and can point to nothing to support this allegation. The purpose is simply to embarrass, and we join with Dyke District in asking this sentence to be struck. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Examiner, I don't disagree with anything that the gentleman has said, but beyond that, it's just a position.
Mr. Hunter,
Mr. Honorable Examiner, I submit to you that evidently our local attorneys never took Attorney 101, which says that never ask a question unless you already know the answer. I asked three questions in that motion. Could it be that the entire facade of flood control is actually more about flood insurance and promoting more irresponsible development in the floodplain? The applicant has stated several times large portions of Burlington would be taken out of the floodplain. Did you ever, Mr. Examiner, make a determination, or did the planning department ever make a determination what portions of Burlington would be taken out of the floodplain? And then this is the one that seems to set Mr. Schultz off, and his commissioner, does it involve property that one of the Dyke District Commissioners, who works for one of the major developers in the valley, owns or has an interest in? They state that by implying that the permit is being obtained for the benefit by a public official who is employed by a land developer in any other context would be libelous and inappropriate. Really. Schedule Valley Herald first brought this issue to my attention, where it says Churchma, 57, manager of Hansel Mitzel Homes. Churchma said he wants to make Dyke District 12 dikes federally certified to eliminate flood insurance in the district. The levees need to be raised. Does that sound like flood control, or does that sound like getting yourself out of paying flood insurance? Does Mr. Mitzel, the man that Mr. Churchma worked for, own property in the city of Burlington? According to the Skagit County tax assessor, yes, he does. The location of that property is highlighted in the little dollar signs. Most notably, I'm sorry, I'm having problems with this mouse. This is Gage's Slough. This is a large office complex. This is another house. And you might remember from the testimony that you heard, Mr. Examiner, in 1985. No water crosses the freeway in the south part of Burlington from Gage's Slough to what was then the motion picture theater, but now is the Target store. So this, and when you asked the State Department of Transportation why did they do that, they said, well, we had to let the floodwaters flow over that area. So this is both a natural and a man-made floodway. Here is the Cascade Mall. And this is his other property. Now, this is the $2.5 million office complex that he owns. Some very big names that I'm sure travel in Mr. Mitzel's company or have their offices there, including our Mr. Schultz, Dyke District 12 attorney, the personal injury and bankruptcy attorney. Again, Mr. Examiner, here's the river. No water passes over the interstate until it gets to Gage's Slough. So this building is in jeopardy. I will say this for Mr. Schultz. At least he has an office on the second floor. Let's revisit the splash point that these guys are so upset about. Could it be that this entire facade of flood control is actually more about flood insurance? Well, the Dyke District Commissioner himself said this is about flood insurance. Does it involve property that one of the Dyke District Commissioners who works for a major developer in Valley owns or has an interest in? I just showed you. Yes, it does. This is what this whole facade is really all about. Homeowners face hikes as high as 18% a year after year until the government is collecting what needs to be paid out in claims. They are $24 billion in deficit. This is the city of Burlington who has used the National Flood Insurance Program to develop all of that irresponsible development in the floodplain. They have used it, and now they want to get out of it so that they don't have to pay their fair share of the $24 billion deficit. Remember, Mr. Examiner, when Mr. Semeru, the only gentleman on the opposing side that I actually had respect for, he, again, I'm having problems with this mouse, he pointed to this area right here, adjacent to the railroad bridge, and he very proudly stated that his hydraulic model did not take into account putting any fill material there, and that was because it would have extreme impacts on the upstream property owners. Well, what is this if this is not fill material? The Dyke District has done this time after time after time. This is the area Mr. Semeru pointed to. This is the area in that smoke and mirrors hydraulic that they submitted to you. Didn't put any fill there. There's 3 feet, 4 feet of fill material. I don't care whether fill material is put up with a bulldozer or it's put in little green bags. It's still fill material, and the hydraulic model should include that. One of the reasons that they want to go forward with the Corps of Engineers hydrology is that the Corps' hydrology also does not count this material. And I submit to you that when we get to that argument, I want NHC here to say what it was they took into account and what they didn't. Again, more landfill in little green bags along Highway 20. And then to cap all this off about how scandalous there was, and I submit to you that there is in fact a scandal, but it doesn't come from me. The scandal comes from Dyke District 12. This is the Nookachamps Wetland Mitigation Bank, and I don't know, Mr. Examiner, if you had anything at all, if you made any rulings on that or not.
It's been about a year of my life.
Really? Well, I'm sorry, sir, but evidently, at any point in time, did they tell you they were going to take hundreds of truckloads of dirt out of that mitigation bank, drive it down Francis Road, over to Highway 9, to Cedar Woolley, back down Highway 20, and dump it in the Dyke District 12's levee? I doubt seriously if they did. Who owns the wetland mitigation bank? Well, here's our good friend, Mr. Mitzel, once again. One of the major players. He, Mount Vernon-based developer who partnered with the Wildlands and the Nookachamps Bank. Mr. Mitzel, October 20th, 2009. When did Burlington start publishing their BSDEIS? That was 2009. You see how all this has been going on for many years behind the scenes. And they never told you, the examiner, what their plans were. They have used the process and abused the process. So in this den of iniquity, what do we have? We have Mr. Mitzel, major developer in Skagit County. We have Mr. I only need 30 seconds. Mr. Mitzel's manager of Dyke District 12 is also the commissioner for Dyke District 12. Dyke District 12 attorney, we assume he pays rent to Mr. Mitzel for his office space in the building. We have them stealing soil, not dirt, soil from the Nookachamps in order to do what? Flood the Nookachamps. And they want to call me scandalous. And now we have a county senior planner who has attended every single meeting you've had. And yet she's listed as the senior planner for the Wetlands Mitigation Bank. Mr. Examiner, I ask you to please deny their motion to strike because everything I have said in that motion is the truth.
All right, thank you. However, insofar as we're dealing with this Dyke District Commission, we're triggering lines 11 and 12 that contain an allegation related to the commissioner. So those lines will be stricken.
May I ask, Mr. Examiner, your reasoning there?
They moved to strike what they consider to be scandalous references to
right.
This commission. And I look at the motion, and then I'm mistaken. But on page 17 of your motion, line four of page 17. starts, one has to give oneself, one has oneself within the amount of time. Why doesn't the applicant simply wait for the DI study? Then there's my other remark. So finally, in 11-12, it says, does it involve property of one of the type of commissioners who works for one of the major developers? Isn't the Valley owner has an interest in it?
That's, I thought.
It,
but they were complaining.
Can I respond to that?
And so that's what I'm striking.
Yeah, I would agree with you entirely. But now that I look at it, I'm wondering, would the commissioner also be willing to strike lines 6 through 8? Could it be that this entire facade of flood control is actually more about flood insurance and promoting more irresponsible development? Now, the words facade and irresponsible are, I think,
well, I'm just going to limit my ruling to what I have done, and I'll admit there's some kind of colorful language there, but it isn't really inflammatory. I think we'll just delete those two lines.
Okay, thank you.
And that brings us to the next matter, which is to back this motion to strike references to altered unofficial transcripts. And this, again, I think relates to that same initial motion to recuse and disqualify the hearing. That's
where
those references were.
Your Honor, I think so, but it appears that these allegations have spread somewhat, I think, throughout the pleadings. And I would like to, I mean, it's been very difficult to track where this information is going and what's to decide where on Mr. Punch's website, what's an exhibit, what isn't. But I think I can walk it through some of the improprieties that I would submit.
Oh, okay. With respect to that initial ruling I just made, I agree with the characterization of counsel that it is essentially lacking any other foundation scandals. However, the more persuasive reason for eliminating the names is simply irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the motives of the applicant are for wanting to raise this act. The issue for us is whether or not.
Along those lines, I'd like to make one comment about Mr. Sumter's last presentation, if I could. Mr. Sumter, he's a great historian. I mean, he has a good deal of information about these particulars, but he can't seem to control himself as far as accusations. Now, in his argument, he argued a number of things. He argued the apparent financial interest of Mr. Mitchell. He hasn't proved anything about that. Accusations against me, he just has rent property, rather space in his building, which I paid for it, too much as a matter of fact. And if he has allegations against Mr. Mitchell, he can make those. And as far as problems of corruption in some matter, he can make those. If every single one of his points, including attacks on the county planner, attacks on myself, attacks on Mr. Mitchell, again, I'm not part of this proceeding. Ordinarily, I would move to strike this entire argument, but what's the point now?
I understand what you're saying, and I guess I'm sure there's a cautionary note. This ruling was made because I think the statement is irrelevant. And I would say the same as to all of the kind of discussion of the sort of motives and character of the people.
So the truth has no place in this hearing. Is that what you're saying, sir? I just want to make sure you're saying the truth has no place in this hearing.
I'm saying the truth has no place.
Well, that's what I said. That's what I asked.
I'm saying relevant material has a place, and that's not relevant to whether the bank.
All right, sir. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll go to my second argument. I presume I don't need to state an answer.
No, you don't.
Okay. Mr. Jammer, I've spent a lot of time on this motion, and I think it poses a real serious problem in terms of the record of this proceeding, in terms of moving forward, in terms of allegations of what the record are.
and most notably by the apparent tacit merging of the court document and the record, as limited as it is, with Mr. Kunzer's website. Now, you've gone through the history before of having two hearings in this matter, the 24th and June 12th. We, of course, have no objection to the one on the 24th. We think Mr. Kunzer downloaded that and transcribed what he could accurately, so no question about that. But we have serious reservations about the second one. Now, the June 12th hearing was the correct defect in the prior hearing. And you noted that there is no official transcript in these proceedings. There are some things in the record and some things not. But the problem with the second hearing is that Mr. Kunzer has taken it upon himself to transcribe the testimony in that hearing. Now, if we had a transcriptionist that was accurate and didn't, you know, put additional things in the testimony, that'd be one thing. But here, if you go to Mr. Kunzer's website, and the documents filed in these proceedings are linked to his website. So when he files a document, he puts, instead of Exhibit A or transcript, he links it to his website. So you have to go to his website and download it. There's not an actual official transcript in these proceedings. And so what's happened is that there are actually three transcripts that Mr. Kunzer has prepared, all different. We have one transcript that is a transcript that is written during, and I want to make clear the importance of this, because the transcript is the Bible, so to speak. It's the roadmap. It's the document that people testify to under oath, it's used for appeals, it's used for citation of the record. But what Mr. Kunzer has done here, in one of the transcripts he's typed out, it's 76 pages long, it has 47 insertions of hyperlinks. In other words, you go through the testimony, and all of a sudden, Mr. Kunzer has submitted the citation, the transcript, which if you click on it, you go to his website. And you go through the, who knows what it's going to say, but obviously the problem contains it. But, and it has 86 footnotes in the transcript. There's no way possible this could purport to be an even closely to accurate transcript of the proceedings. There's a second transcript that has 72 pages. It has 45 citations and 7 footnotes. And there is a third transcript in Mr. Kunzer's recent motion in response. To paraphrase his testimony, he said, well, these attorneys don't know anything about these transcripts, but okay, I'll submit a complete unedited transcript. Now, this is after we've gone through all these proceedings, filed motions, and some of which Mr. Kunzer has filed with the court or with the hearing examiner, some of which reside on his website, which are not filed and are called, they're in the category of court documents, but they haven't been filed, including these exhibits. These exhibits reside on another place. And I did find on his website that Mr. Kunzer has a CD of the testimony. He could easily and fairly have downloaded that. But instead, he has these other two transcripts, which he's filed, and these transcripts, I want to go through a couple entries here. I have submitted these in my motion. These transcripts are lurid, they're scandalous, they're attached in the transcript. So now in the transcript, and then at the bottom, he has his footnotes. And these footnotes call our engineer a liar. They call myself and Dyke 12 several times. They say we lie. There is allegations of misuse of taxpayers' funds. There's profanity. There's disparagement of Dyke District 12 commissioners. Now, if he downloaded the transcript without these lurid accusations, he doesn't want them. I wouldn't concern him. But he's referenced the transcript and documents. He's also sent them to everyone. There is a memorandum in support of City Lloyd the transcript is attached. I mean, it's hyperlinked to his website, and it's the one that contains 86 footnotes and disparaging comments. And he circulated that to the county prosecutor, to the county, to the mayors, and to other people. So this defamatory conduct I was talking about in the first part of the motion continues because it's exploding in a magnificent scale. I wanted to show, if I can use the overhead projector. And Mr. Jenner, you have these in the record. Should I put them up here?
Just for whatever you want.
Yeah, public consumption.
Oh, we've got one screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting to say yes. Oh, okay. Okay.
Hey, I've got the same screen.
Okay, I'll just go ahead here.
Things are moving around on the screen.
Your Honor, these...
No, not on the screen.
Okay, I'll put it back. So this is part of what Mr. Comfort considers the transcript. In normal text, we have the testimony of the folks. So they own probably the best explanation of Freeboard and how it's applied, so on and so forth. And then he inserts a citation so somebody can go to his website. I'm sure that the person testifying didn't say that. And then you look at the bottom, and he has all these footnotes. And he has 86 of these footnotes. And here's an example of one of the footnotes. Somebody testifies, I believe this is the engineer, and then Mr. Tunsell puts footnote on the bottom. Clearly, the city of Burlington government, public employees of the Union Club do not care what the people want. So, where you can have testimony in the record, you have his comment, which refutes the testimony. We have another one here where we're discussing the project, and we're discussing Deck 12, and he puts on the bottom, well, this is the engineer talking, and the hell with the impact to anyone else. This makes the whole time Deck 12 change the natural course of the Skagit River. I won't say whether that's true or not, but I think it's a baseless allegation.
Oh my God.
And there's another one, page 65. There are a lot of people who are being hurt by UB 12. They expect that UB 12 will not hurt them. There's another entry on page 69. The engineer is talking and he says, no, he didn't. He lied. So he says the testimony that the engineer gave us a lie, his opinion. Commissioner Elstead is making statements, and he has a quote here that says, let me know if anyone can figure out what she's saying.
And Mr. Schultz, we're getting to the point.
Okay.
Where you've reached your limit.
I have, okay. That's a good point.
Do you have anything in conclusion?
I do have some additional information. So, in any event, I have a list here of, like, a whole number of allegations he's made of people lying and so on and so forth. So clearly this cannot be an accurate transcription, although Mr. Punzler implies that it is. So I guess the problem here is the merging of the form record and his website. It creates confusion in the testimony. It creates danger that somebody in the future will read it and think that this is the testimony, or a newspaper will pick it up. The newspaper did ask for copies of these, by the way. And so these salacious allegations, if they're unfounded, could and have been disseminated through the county. And what we would seek, Your Honor, is we have these footnotes, the ones I cited on my page, and we would like you to strike those from the record under page 9, footnote 13. There's six of them here. Just be here and send out a copy of that. That would be my of the areas in that we'd like to strike in the testimony.
If they're part of your motion,
they are.
Yeah.
And I could find those in a second. Yeah, afterwards, Scott Thomas, I think, will talk a little bit. And I'll find that reference for you.
Okay.
But we would move to have those entries stricken as not related to the issues that we're talking about. But as a last matter, Your Honor, I would say that only you can clean up this record. The record, I think, has been contaminated by cross-pollinization with these documents and the website and all these salacious allegations. And a record that has 86 personal footnotes cannot be in any way, shape, or form record. So what I request of the hearing examiner is that you strike any exhibit submitted by Mr. Conklin, which links to this altered record. Because that exhibit, if it's used in these proceedings, is there for the world to see how the district commissioners are corrupt, engineers lie. You know, for some reason, I rent property from Mitchell, so I'm a criminal. These other things that are not part of these proceedings. So I would suggest that you strike any place Mr. Counselor asserts Exhibit A. I would request that you strike these allegations on page 9, 8, 12, 13, which I'll provide to you in a second. But moreover, Your Honor, I think to make sure that we have a clean record, I would submit that maybe what we do is we commission somebody who could type that transcript, a neutral third party who's reliable, to type that transcript, but then we know what the transcript is. And we can all cite to that. But at this point, I would submit that all of Mr. Conklin's counsel's motions, if they cite to this, are defective, and you should dismiss both of them. That's what I would ask. I would also request going forward that you issue an order that there be no hyperlinks to Mr. Conklin's website. The information there is unreliable, can be changed by him changing the hyperlink. I'm not saying he's doing that, but I think that there is a danger that would further exacerbate the situation. I've been trying to figure out how we could salvage this record and move forward, and I think that maybe a suggestion would be from here on out we only file hard copies with exhibits and allow no links to documents that could be altered. So it's just a suggestion, because then we would know clearly what the record is, you can address it, we can know the exhibit, and you can accept it. And because the current situation is we have no formal record, we have scandalous allegations made on the website, we have, this has been disseminated.
You're going to have to stop.
Okay, come on. Okay. And last thing, I did ask for an order in limine. I have a proposed order that I would submit to the court for your consideration.
Okay.
Should I hand that up to you?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Thomas, do you have something to add?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. If I understood your comments at the outset of the hearing that the exhibits or the cited inquiry, including transcripts, are not part of the record, then it would seem that the issue is one going forward of what that transcript looks like. I agree with my colleague that the record in this matter is quite important. Our system of laws is based on the record. And I point out that Mr. Kunstler has notified us that he intends to perhaps appeal this matter to the Board of Commissioners, the Shoreline Hearings Board, the Fulton County Superior Court, and perhaps a separate action in the United States District Court. That record developed in this proceeding will be used in all of those subsequent proceedings if that should come to pass. And as such, an accurate record is very important. What I assume will be the case is that if this matter is appealed, then we will secure copies of the tapes that are prepared. We will order the record transcribed and filed with the Shoreline Hearing Board or the Superior Court, whatever it may be. And then the concern, of course, is that the record that is transcribed is going to be different than the record developed here below, which will cause confusion going forward. And so we would seek to prevent that from occurring. I think that's all I have to say, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I do have citations to the ones described. Are there any things in my motion?
Sure.
All right.
No, Mr. Examiner, just what I said before, I know Mr. Harris, what Mr. Schultz and Mr. Thomas have said, you know, that we don't have any positional comment.
Okay.
I never realized what a terrible guy I was until this afternoon. And I never realized how easy it was to befuddle and confuse the Dyke District 12 attorney. I had on my webpage clearly marked LJK transcript with comments. Mr. Schultz evidently has not heard of the Constitution and the right of free speech. He has purposely mischaracterized what I'm entitled to as my opinion, and it is labeled as my opinion on the webpage. As far as I'm concerned, this entire issue is moot because I didn't want to confuse local counsel with hyperlinks to exhibits, which, you know, anyone outside of lawyering in Skagit County in federal court, they use hyperlinks all the time. So what I did, Mr. Examiner, was prepare for you a transcript of the hearing, no hyperlinks, no footnotes, and I also included a copy of the motion that I submitted to you with the correct cite to the exact page in the transcript. This is just another red herring by Mr. Schultz. It doesn't want the truth to be known by the people of Skagit County. So I would move that his motion be dismissed in its entirety. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I probably know that. Can I comment on that?
He's already had his shot.
He has, but I'll allow him to make a brief response. Your Honor, I think Mr. Kunstler has misled the court here about three times. It is true that his website says the one of the transcripts says with LJK comments on it, but when you hyperlink from the documents he sent, it doesn't go to that. It goes directly to the document. And what the document says, all of his documents say transcript of June 12, 2013 public hearing. It doesn't say anything about his comments. It doesn't say anything about footnotes. These all purport to be the transcript. So if you go to his website, you can see actually where he says that he has his citations. It's easy because then I can see what he's altered. But for the uninitiated who look at one of his motions or the motions that we've received by email, if you click on that hyperlink, it goes to here. And it purports to be the transcript. And it is true that Mr. Kunzler, in the response, has filed a new, quote, unedited transcript. But it's edited as well. The engineer that he seeks to recuse MHC, anytime there's MHC, it's highlighted. And I'm sure that none of the testimony of this people said, MHC did my work. Highlight my name. There is an abridgment of the testimony in the beginning. As you recall, there was testimony on another matter that occurred first. All that's been excised, but I'm not sure if there's any additional information excised or not. So that's an alteration. He also has in a number of places where he testified, he puts it in italics. So anybody reading this transcript would see NHC highlighted, they would see his testimony in italics, and they would see missing portions of it. So Mr. Kunzler can't help himself from amending documents and changing information. That's why we need someone, a third party, who's reliable to review this properly.
Mr. Examiner, I would submit to you that this salacious comments by this small town attorney, I've had just about enough of it. He is way out of bounds here. There's nothing wrong with the transcript that I gave to you for this hearing. Now, if he wants to pay or he wants to take the time to transcribe the hearing himself, that's fine. I've got no objections to that whatsoever. But his personal attacks on me, I'm not going to tolerate much longer.
It's not personal, you can see it here. Is the highlighting the MHC the engineer wants to refuse?
Yes, I think, we're adults. Let's do our very best to keep this as civil as we can. I don't think that we're really dealing with personal attacks here, but we're dealing with the reliability of certain documents. In the matter of these references to the transcript, which apparently had some additions to it. I think this is all with relation to an argument that has to do with the disqualifying inheritance thing, ultimately. And I think it's the appropriate thing to do is just take that information and say that those references in that document, which is not a part of the record, but is a part of the argument for the motion, that it just goes to the weight that is to be given to the information that's presented, and that there's no real point in striking anything. I know that is probably upsetting, that there are documents out there in computer land that say all sorts of things that various people here wouldn't want the world to see. But I do think that is just the nature of our society, and that we can't put a stop to what people are doing in that way, at least not through this meeting. So that's what I'm going to do on the second of the motions, and that brings us to the motion of Mr. Kunzler to refuse the hearing.
His watch must be broke. There we go.
Mr.
Mr. Examiner, I've worked for attorneys for 34 years. This is the very first time that I've ever been involved in asking an adjudicator to recuse himself. And really, the only reason I'm doing so is to preserve this for the record. I truly do believe that you were led down the garden path by these Dyke District people, that you they pretty much snowed you and did not tell you the truth, and I think that I proved that in my first presentation today. I believe that the Honorable Examiner based your decision on the applicant's word while not having any supporting evidence. Where are the floodplain permits? They were never produced. What kind of a lawyer goes to a public hearing, says he has permits, and then doesn't produce them? How can an adjudicator, with all due respect, Mr. Examiner, how can an adjudicator make a decision based with, trust me, the check is in the mail? They never produced any evidence that they had permits for their levy system. And I know for a fact that there were other people besides myself that raised that issue. You would think they would have taken this opportunity to cure that by producing the permits, but they have not. Without all the necessary permits, aren't you, in fact, as the adjudicator, legitimizing previous illegal activity by this Dyke District? The second point was the electronic records. What I don't understand is, what did you utilize to make your decision besides the staff report and the misleading information you were given by the Dyke District and the City of Burlington? What specific information did you utilize from the general public? I don't see anything in your decision that references any document or any testimony from the public, only from the government. The Honorable Examiner, like the City of Burlington, the Dyke District, the Skagit County Planning Department, ignored crucial evidence that was submitted regarding the hydraulic impacts of the levees on upstream property owners. I, for one, showed you the impacts of the levee system in place in 1990. And since 1990, according to Mr. Schultz, they have made substantial improvements to that levee system. Wasn't that important to you, that you would have at least said something in your decision that there appears to be very severe impacts to upstream property owners and this needs to be thoroughly vetted? Mr. Halverson, who's in the audience here today, has spent hundreds of dollars taking surveys of the Skagit River. He submitted those surveys to you as evidence. They clearly show that the Mount Vernon gauge was 37.3 at the height of water around the man-made storage basin was almost 42 feet. Does that not show you, Mr. Examiner, the impacts of that levee system on the man-made storage basin? Wasn't that important enough for you to at least acknowledge Mr. Halverson, who took time off from his farm and came in to testify and show you the hundreds of dollars he spent on this? It's a crucial piece of evidence. The fourth point I made was that you failed to address the floodway issue, which is crucial to any work being proposed on the levee system. I submitted several letters from FEMA headquarters in Washington, D.C. You didn't mention those. When controversy presents itself in front of an adjudicator, is it not your job to settle it and not to ignore it? Burlington says it cut a deal with FEMA. Where's the deal? The same place as the permits? The fifth point I raised was that the Honorable Examiner ignored provisions of the SMA, and especially with respect to improvements versus maintenance by the applicant. The applicant has an employee that shows up at flood meetings and testifies, all we ever do is maintenance. We never do improvements, we just do maintenance. And that's a big joke to them. That way they don't have to get permits. But I submit to you that the WAC is very, very specific with respect to what constitutes maintenance and normal repair. And what they have done is anything but maintenance. Maintenance is mowing the grass. Maintenance is fixing your levee after it has been damaged. Maintenance is not adding 4 feet of fill to your levee system. The Honorable Examiner, by limiting the testimony to just the first three issues identified by the County Commissioners, is denying the citizens' right to express themselves. I firmly believe government should never limit the public testimony. The citizens have a right to be heard. With all due respect, Mr. Examiner, I am concerned that you have not listened to the citizens of Skagit County, that you have only listened to what the applicants and the Skagit County Planning Department staff report have told you. When I left here, Mr. Examiner, I'm sorry I left my notes at my seat, but you ended the hearing by making the statement, I've already read everything that was submitted at the previous hearing. I don't think it'll take very long to make a decision. And that, I know I left that day feeling that, wow, what the hell did I come for? He's already made up his mind. And that was how several of the people in the audience that I spoke to, that is how they felt. So, again, I apologize, but you know as well as I do that if this issue is going to go forward on appeal, it has to be raised. And I have told you in the parking lot at our ex parte meeting that it's nothing personal, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone want to reply to this? Okay, Mr. Thomas.
Your Honor, we believe that Mr. Gunsler, Innovator Gunsler, brought his motion on a fundamental wrong basis. What Mr. Gunsler does is relies on the decision that the current examiner has already made to allege that you have violated the Fairness and Fairness Doctrine. Essentially, he seeks to re-argue the matter that's already been decided. In other words, he's unhappy after reading your decision with the outcome in that decision. In particular, he's unhappy that the current examiner did not assign more importance to the dated graphic of what he describes as flood impacts that he had submitted. He's unhappy that a different decision was not reached by the current examiner in the mid-80s concerning the designation of Aegis Slough as a short under the Shoreline Management Act, and he's unhappy he did not reach a different conclusion as to the work allowed in the floodway. But the remedy for being unhappy with the decision is an appeal. Mr. Kunstler has taken a different path. He seeks to have the hearing examiner, the person that decided these issues, removed after reading the decision. He provides no evidence of any bias, any personal interest, or any prejudgment in the issues. He failed to allege any facts to support any theory of bias. And there is none. There's been no allegation of a personal interest. We can dismiss that one right away. That's one of the categories that our Supreme Court has identified as a violation of the appearance of fairness. With regard to prejudgment, he points to the fact that a second hearing was required, at which two of the individuals did not testify once again. And as a corollary, he argues that the hearing examiner's failure to release his note constitutes evidence of bias. In other words, there must be something either hidden in those notes, and there's no available method of determining what the decision was based upon, what the hearing examiner's decision was based upon. But equipment failure, such as the recording equipment, is not an uncommon event. It happens all the time in the Superior Courts and in the Courts of Appeal, and they've addressed a rule, adopted a rule to address the preparation of a record. In those bodies, the parties are to agree what constitutes the record,
If they cannot agree, then the judge or the master who conducted the hearing resolves the issue. In this instance, you decided to conduct a second hearing. That's an appropriate method of going forward, but it does fall short of demonstrating that a decision has already been made. With regards to bias or prejudice, and the issue of having all of the permits, I have to admit that in this instance, I'm the one that's confused and befuddled. I'm not entirely sure what permits we're referring to here. I can find nothing in the Shoreline Management Act or the County Shoreline Master Program that requires an agency to review all the permits over the past century or more when considering a substantial development permit. On the other hand, if Mr. Kunstler is arguing that additional permits are required before a shoreline substantial development may be issued, then that would violate the vesting requirements. Those permits must proceed at the same time. They cannot be required to be obtained before the shoreline substantial development permit is issued. Mr. Kunstler makes an argument that the hydraulics and the hydrology were ignored, but that's addressed in the hearing examiner's decision. And in particular, the hearing examiner selected the PI hydrology, Pacific International Engineering Hydrology, as being consistent. And that's acceptable. Selecting one party's evidence over another party's evidence is what courts do every day of the week. With regards to the floodway, Mr. Kunstler argues that you did not consider the floodway issue, but this is outside your authority. That's not subject to the shoreline permit. And finally, Mr. Kunstler argues there's a distinction between maintenance and improvement. And indeed, there is a distinction. But here, Dyke District 12 has applied for a shoreline substantial development permit. It's not exempt as under a maintenance application, is actually seeking for improvement. And finally, Mr. Kunstler just sat on his rights. He failed to petition for disqualification promptly at the time of the remand. We'd ask the hearing examiner to deny this motion. Thank you, sir.
Yes,
sir.
Good job.
I'll go to the last one first, and I'll cite the City of Bellevue, the King County Boundary Review Board, where it states explicitly in the context of conflict of interest in the judicial, that a party with such information will not sit back hoping to achieve a desirable result from the board despite the perceived unfairness, and then use the information to challenge an adverse result. In another case, Kitsap or Growth Management Hearings Board, 91 Wash App and 34, 1998. When a party does not take advantage of an opportunity to preclude a decision maker from participating in a decision on appearance of fairness grounds, that party waives the right to later challenge the decision on appeal. And then the cases are, there are a number of cases that say that if the party is going to seek refusal or disqualification, they must do that either promptly at the time when they learn that the hearing examiner or the judge will rule or preside, or promptly after discovering the grounds for disqualification. And I agree with Mr. Thomas that there have been absolutely no grounds for disqualification for yourself. Intervenor constantly uses phrases like simply ignored evidence, limited evidence, no supporting evidence, ignored crucial evidence, ignored provisions of the SMA. That's part of the decision-making process. You decide those things. And his primary argument is that there's a violation of the appearance of fairness doctrine. It wasn't proven. All of his information, and there are very few cases he cites, all of his information relates to simply ignoring evidence. The bottom line is Mr. Kunstler didn't like the decision, so now he's trying to eliminate the decision maker.
That's really what it's about. So we would request that you deny that motion. All right, thank you. All right, it's rather difficult to deal with a motion that's directed to yourself. It is my conclusion that the motion should be denied. There is a strong theme that I was just wrong the first time, and I can be wrong without being subject to a motion to disqualify. Because it's just a different view of the way things came out. I would say, as to the business about the improvements versus the maintenance, all those things that have been done out there on the site before this application are really not relevant to this application. This is not a case about voting action. It's a case about what the Dyke District is proposing to do now. And I'm in no position to rule on whether they've behaved well or badly in fact. I'm just looking at the application before me. And that's what I intend to continue to do. And I note that the three issues the commissioners sent back, at least the one about upstream effects, was something that was at least looked at before. And there are friends who say, you just didn't have the whole story on that, and you didn't do it. So get more information and then look at it again and tell us what you think. And that's exactly what I intend to do. I am not prejudged that matter at all. That's, I guess, what I want to say about that. Is I'm perfectly happy to listen to what the parties bring forward. And in that regard, I don't regard, I guess I'm getting ahead of it. So that's my ruling on the motion to disqualify. And so let's move on to, let's take a break for about 5 minutes to allow everybody to walk around. And then we'll come back and do the intervener's motion to disqualify the applicant. Next.
This was a motion that I did not want to file and would not have filed had the attorneys not made such a big deal out of it. All I was trying to do at the pre-hearing conference was to alert you to the possibility of there being a conflict of interest, because NHC had done work for the Corps. They've done work for the plaintiffs in the former litigation, and now when the city of Burlington hired them, I thought that there would possibly be a conflict. So I was forced into filing this motion. I believe NHC is perhaps the best hydraulic people that you can possibly use. They certainly did good work in 1995 when they put together the graphic that everyone seems to want to ignore. And so I would really like to withdraw the motion.
All right. That does sort of abridge the time we need to allot to that.
Yes, it does.
Good. Thank you very much. So that motion is withdrawn, and that brings us to the City of Burlington's motion and the Dyke District's motion is that basically about limiting testimony. So you guys can split it up the way you want.
Before we get there, can I address another matter?
It relates to Mr. Gunsler's withdrawing this motion. In my materials, you may recall there was a contact by Mr. Gunsler, ex parte contact of our expert, and an email was sent that we thought was threatening because the email indicated, well, Mr. Gunsler sent the email threatening to disqualify, or threatening the expert with charges of conflict of interest. And you can submit documents in the court record and whatnot. And I can point out this was in our last motion. Have you all seen that? Okay. And we felt that, and clearly that was under CR 26 an improper ex parte contract to influence the written. And we had asked for some terms on that. But since Mr. Counselor has withdrawn his motion, we will withdraw our reference to that. But I just wanted to bring it, in case it needs to be argued later, I wanted to make an oral presentation for that. Okay.
If the examiner would allow me, I would like to introduce the email exchange that I made. Malcolm Lathan is a personal friend of mine.
I don't think you have to do that.
Really? You don't want the email.
I do not.
So he's alleged that I did something wrong, and you don't want to see what I said in the email.
No one is following up on his allegations either.
Okay. Thank you.
We're just letting it drop. And in point of fact, Andy, you see, said in that email that this is not a conflict of interest. So if Mr. Fenslin withdraws his motion, I'm fine.
All right,
gentlemen,
proceed. So I believe we're on the last two matters, number 5 and 6, which I prefer to address. City's motion in limine and motion to restrict tonight's logic out. And again, I would reiterate that in this matter, relevant evidence is just unhelpful. Here the city argues that evidence that is unrelated to the issues on remand should not be allowed. And again, I pointed out those issues earlier today that contained in the Board of Commissioners' remand order or resolution. And here we make two arguments. The first argument is that old data sets, old hydrology reports, is irrelevant. It's been superseded by more recent data, more recent computer runs. And then the second argument we make is that testimony should be limited to the remanded issue. So let me get to the first argument, that the old data is irrelevant. We understand from the hearings held to date that the hydraulics and the hydrology reports that predate the time that the permit was vested are intended to be submitted into evidence. Mr. Kunstler has submitted old testimony in the form of trial testimony, deposition transcripts from a lawsuit that is from 1997. But this is not the forum to retry that old lawsuit, nor is it the forum to retry issues that have already been decided. These old reports have no significance and cannot impact decision coming forward. They don't relate to those three issues. And moreover, they're just confusing. The amount of data, the amount of briefing submitted in this matter is significant. It will be more so towards the end, and additional motion papers will just clog up the record without providing any assistance to anybody. The second argument is to limit testimony to the remand issues. And for this argument, I rely upon regulatory reform. That is a statute that was adopted some number of years ago, and the essence, one of the requirements of that statute is to limit
hearings to one open record hearing, one closed record appeal hearing. Mr. Kunstler asked the hearing examiner not to limit testimony to the remand items, but rather to open up the hearings to allow testimony on any topic. But the public has already had such an opportunity to testify. Moreover, that hearing was closed, an appeal was taken, and that closed record appeal hearing was also closed. Allowing the subsequent hearing to receive testimony on any aspect of any issue would violate the statute. It would allow a second hearing, constitute a second hearing, in violation of the statute. It should not be allowed.
Yes, sir. Just a couple brief points. I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Thompson's argument. I think it's very well taken. And I would point out that you have power under D-104 to admit or exclude evidence. You have discretion to determine what's admitted or precluded. And under ER-403, the guideline is, even if it's relevant, evidence for which probative value is substantially outweighed by the danger of prejudice, confusion of issues, or misleading the tribunal, or considerations of undue delay, waste of time, needless presentation of evidence, can be rejected under ER-403. It almost seems like this rule was made for this situation, because to introduce, I think it was 6 depositions and a 2-week trial transcript, which I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming it's hundreds of pages of documents.
14,000.
Oh, okay. I agree with that.
Thank you.
14,000 pages of documents, and that makes it even more telling that it should not be admitted. We're in court to trial almost 20 years ago. It's not only old typology, it's ancient typology. It's before the EIS, and NHC certainly has worked with different clients to update that typology. The whole goal of this process is to find the best typology to do what's best for the community. I-12 has no interest in flooding people or any of the allegations made here. We just want to get along and protect standards from flooding. And that's what we want to do. So I would submit that introducing that old testimony and hydrology is not useful. It's a waste of time. Even if introduced, it will have no effect on the collection of NHC or the hydrology they're going to provide. So it's absolutely useless to enter that testimony. And further, I guess this is the main point. The Board of County Commissioners said, NHC is a client of Burlington Type 12. They're going to do the best hydrology, or the most current hydrology. That was their direction. And that's what we're doing under NHC. Mr. Thompson is withdrawing his motion about NHC. So I think we're good to go. I don't think there's any reason to admit any of the specimens like question. You deny that motion. Okay.
My argument is that I just don't think that government should be limiting the testimony of the citizens. And as far as NHC, the information that I submitted to you, it's been submitted since 2009 in Burlington's EIS. And clearly, Mr. Schultz does not understand the graphic, or he just chooses to ignore it, which is what Burlington did and Dyke 12 has done. And the issue that before you, as far as the county commissioners are concerned, they said that any issue not decided by them at that point in time would still be open for the record. So clearly there's going to be more testimony. And I submit to you that there's nothing wrong with what NHC did. The only reason I submitted the testimony of the depositions and the trial testimony, by the way, the trial lasted 5.5 months, John. It's relevant from the standpoint of that it proves this Dyke District has already had a terrible impact on the upstream property owners. And now they're asking 4 more feet of fill. And now because of the core hydrology, which I've got no problem with them using, they're going to have to add more than 4 feet of fill. For what purpose? To protect them from floods or to protect them from flood insurance? And that's what this is all about. This has nothing to do with flood control. This is about flood insurance. And they know that, and I believe that you know that. So other than that, sir, I have nothing more.
Mr. Jen, can I clarify something I stated previously?
Yes.
I think I said that we would want the motion to be made. That obviously meant that it would be granted. Because it's, I've been granted a befuddling little country attorney.
So yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned it.
I'm glad you recognized it.
But then the last point is, it is true, portions of the testimony have been submitted, including this map since 2009. But what we're being asked here is to submit a 14,000-page document.
Okay, I am a little unclear as to where all of this prior depositions, portions of the three of these trial were submitted. Were they submitted in connection with some of the motions for this?
Well, I wondered that myself, but it seems to me that the one map that Mr. Thompson referred to, that's been submitted, and maybe some other documents.
And that map, I think, is already in the record.
Correct.
Yeah, so I don't think we have any problem with that being part of the record.
Okay, good.
But where do the other stuff?
It was submitted to you in the motion for the disqualifying the expert, and that's what I made hard copies of. The only reason I did it was because he obviously didn't understand the graphic, so here's the hydraulic engineers telling you what they did.
So I think that since that motion's been withdrawn, we don't need to really worry about any of that anymore. And so we're looking at the business of hydrology we use and limiting the testimony to things that are relevant to the question.
And I have no problems with that.
Yeah,
none whatsoever.
We do have the one that does that one point we wanted to raise about what hydrology.
And why don't you raise that
point? I'd love to have it. This is an argument that was raised in Burlington's motion, paragraph F, and I didn't see the argument in the district's paperwork. But to the extent they want to make the same argument, then we would this would apply to them as well. Basically, the argument that the city of Burlington is making is that the hydrology that was enforced at the time of the permit application is hydrology that was used.
That's number 7.
I think
you've got to head.
Okay, I'll wait for the appropriate time.
Well, I can maybe short circuit this because I've read the motion and I have read your response and I agree with you. If the vesting doctrine doesn't really apply, then hydraulically it applies to the law or something. So, the facts of what's going on in the world may evolve.
Can I have a record on that now?
Sure.
With regard to vesting, vesting is a bright line rule established by our Supreme Court. Its intent is to protect against arbitrary action. It's a matter of constitutional magnitude. And while CPA makes the argument that hydrology is a data set and not a land use control, really, that's a distinction without a difference. Seagrove's case, or actually his argument, is resolved by Washington case. called New Chapter Investment, the City of Lake Center. And in that case, an applicant sued to be vested to a particular fee rate. And while the court denied the applicant lawsuit, what it did say was that the new fee rate that they wished to be vested to would not force the applicant to use its land differently or build differently or redesign the plans. But that's not true here. In fact, different hydrology would have that impact. Now, I understand that Dyke District 12 has contracted with NHC, as has the City of Burlington, to have related relied on hydrology utilized in this matter. So from that standpoint, I suppose it's moot. But the reason it still has significance is because agreeing to use different hydrology, GI hydrology I'll call it, is different than having county law impose that hydrology. And the reason it's different is because the county's changed it once. It can do it again, and it can do it again, and it can do it again, and the permit can be delayed inevitably and forever. That's the issue that still remains live and is not moved.
Okay. You have made your record. I have made my ruling. And I guess, does that conclude what we're here to do?
Your Honor, I wasn't quite sure about the last motion to include or exclude. I think we excluded the Halverson and the deposition matter.
Yes,
but I wasn't sure.
They're not into they were withdrawn. Okay. And the issues that at hearing, is that opened up to any matter?
I wasn't clear on that, or is it limited?
No, I on that subject, I'm going to limit the hearing to those issues that were remanded by the county commissioners, and to the best of my ability. Well, when you have a public hearing, the public isn't always grasping that concept, but I will do my very best to hold the hearings to those issues, but that's what my jurisdiction is. It's essentially to look at those particular matters that were remanded to me. As far as the quote from the remand where all matters not decided herein are expressly reserved for further proceeding, Mr. Kunstler says, well, you see, that's what we're doing, is we're having further proceedings. But really, this is the commissioner making its order of remand, and what they're saying is that the issues they didn't decide, if this ever comes back to them, are reserved for further proceedings before then. But it isn't a limit. It is not a direction to me. So that isn't going to expand the kind of universe that these hearings are going to be about. Now, I guess if that takes care of our business here today, I guess we should ask somebody, maybe you, Mr. Schultz, to give us a reading on where we are getting this report that we're waiting for.
Excuse me, Mr. Examiner, do you want to close the motion hearing before you ask him that question? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. All right.
Your Honor, have I missed
anything? No, go
ahead. Burlington may know better than that because they I'll tell you what I know.
My understanding is this, Your Honor.
You're not going to get a check.
Yeah.
Don't want to be on the hot seat.
Yeah, just very briefly. My understanding is this, Your Honor. NHC was originally contracted by the City of Burlington to perform the analysis. During this process, we came to the conclusion that Site 12 should also engage NHC for a variety of issues, not related to this hearing so much, having them as a client, and both the unfortunately, that delayed the preparation of the report by a certain amount of time. But precisely now, I don't know, but I understand that it is now soon to be underway. We had expected the report, actually this week, that's been delayed, I believe, and this is the part I'm a little bit unsure about. I believe I was told it for another part of this month of April now, but I'll have to double check with my client to get a permanent data.
All right, what I want to do is as soon as that report is out, it'll be distributed to everybody who's involved here.
Yes.
At the least. And then we need to sit down and schedule the hearing.
Yeah.
And so when that happens, we'll see, but maybe the biggest thing to do would be to have a telephone conference.
Yeah.
And just to figure out some things. But in any event, we won't do anything until that report is. So thank you all. This is, a lot of fascinating reading, and appreciate your efforts and your adjustment.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.